in anything that lay south of his home, because he had once or twice been to the village with Ashish, and he knew that there was nothing very interesting there. In the village he only met other men who were just like his father, men with long dirty robes and wooden shoes turned up at the toe, and turbans on their heads and beards, talking to one another very slowly about things that sounded dull. But he was very interested in everything that lay to the north, because no one ever went that way, and he was never allowed to go there himself. When he was sitting out of doors, mending the nets, and all alone, he would often look eagerly to the north. One could see nothing but a grassy slope running up to a level ridge, and beyond that the sky, with perhaps a few birds in it. Sometimes, if Ashish was there, Shasta would say, "Oh, my father, what is there beyond that hill?" And then, if the fisherman was in a bad temper, he would box Shasta's ears and tell him to attend to his work. Or if he was in a peaceable mood, he would say, "Oh, my son, do not allow your mind to be distracted by idle questions. For one of the poets has said, 'Application to business is the root of prosperity. But those who ask questions that do not concern them are steering the ship of folly toward the rock of indigence.'" Shasta thought that beyond the hill there must be some delightful secret which his father wished to hide from him. In reality, however, the fisherman talked like this because he didn't know what lay to the north. Neither did he care. He had a very practical mind. One day there came from the south a stranger who was unlike any man that Shasta had seen before. He rode upon a strong, dappled horse with flowing mane and tail, and his stirrups and bridle were inlaid with silver. The spike of a helmet projected from the middle of his silken turban, and he wore a shirt of chain mail. By his side hung a curving scimitar, a round shield studded with bosses of brass hung at his back, and his right hand grasped a lance. His face was dark, but this did not surprise Shasta, because all the people of Kaloman are like that. What did surprise him was the man's beard, which was dyed crimson and curled and gleaming with scented oil. But Ashish knew by the gold on the stranger's bare arm that he was a Takan, or great lord, and he bowed, kneeling before him, till his beard touched the earth and made signs to Shasta to kneel also. The stranger demanded hospitality for the night, which of course the fisherman dared not refuse. All the best they had was set before the Takan for supper, and he didn't think much of it, and Shasta, as always happened when the fisherman had company, was given a hunk of bread and turned out of the cottage. On these occasions he usually slept with the donkey in its little thatched stable. But it was much too early to go to sleep yet, and Shasta, who had never learned that it is wrong to listen behind doors, sat down with his ear to a crack in the wooden wall of the cottage to hear what the grown-ups were talking about. And this is what he heard.
"And now, O my host," said the Takan, "I have a mind to buy that boy of yours."
"O my master," replied the fisherman,
and Shasta knew by the wheedling tone the greedy look that was probably coming into his face as he said it,
"what price could induce your servant, poor though he is, to sell into slavery his only child and his own flesh? Has not one of the poets said, 'Natural affection is stronger than soup, and offspring more precious than carbuncles'?"
"It is even so," replied the guest dryly. "But another poet has likewise said, 'He who attempts to deceive the judicious is already bearing his own back for the scourge.' Do not load your aged mouth with falsehoods. This boy is manifestly no son of yours, for your cheek is as dark as mine, but the boy is fair and white like the accursed but beautiful barbarians who inhabit the remote north."
"How well it was said," answered the fisherman, "that swords can be kept off with shields, but the eye of wisdom pierces through every defence. Know then, O my formidable guest, that because of my extreme poverty I have never married and have no child. But in that same year in which the Tizrok, may he live forever, began his august and beneficent reign, on a night when the moon was at her full, it pleased the gods to deprive me of my sleep. Therefore I arose from my bed in this hovel and went forth to the beach to refresh myself with